Hello, everyone. My name is Greg, and welcome back to the podcast, my first season. In this podcast, I interview people who worked in holiday slash ski resorts, hotels, and cruise ships, and we'll talk about their first season in the hospitality and tourism industry. My guest today and I have never worked together before, but we did meet at the second XGO reunion in Cancun, Mexico in 2008, and he has the same name as a very famous American rapper from Mississippi, but that is where the similarities end. Everyone, please help me give a warm welcome to Captain Rick Ross. Rick, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing today, Greg?
Oh, good. Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it because you're a fun guy, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun this podcast.
Well, I hope we have some laughs. There's some great stories from my first season, and but I'll let you run the show because it's, you know, your show.
Okay, thank you. So if you wouldn't mind taking me back in time to where you were living, what you were doing for work, and what year was it, and how the heck did you find out about Club Med, from who, from where?
Well, that's a two-part answer to that question.
Okay.
I found out about Club Med through my grandmother. In the 70s, she would send all the family plane tickets, and we would all go to Club Meds for family reunions. So I got to go to some really interesting locations and, you know, meet up with the family. And that's how I learned about Club Med to begin with.
Okay, that's all right. We'll get to that because I want to know what Club Med was like in the 70s. So fast forward, where are you now living, and what year are we in when you decide to apply?
So I was in Atlanta. I grew up in Atlanta. And I was, you know, delivering pizzas and, you know, doing this. And I knew this wasn't the right job for me, that I needed something big and bold to get myself out there. And I thought to myself, back to my experience in the 70s, and I was like, hey, wait a minute. Why can't I be a GO and go to work for Club Med? You know, I knew how to water ski. I was a tournament water skier at the time. Yeah, I wasn't as outgoing as I was because Club Med pulled that out of me, thank God. But I said to myself, well, you know, why the heck not, you know, go back to work for Club Med?
Okay, just a few questions here. You were delivering pizzas. Were you not making enough tips? Is that why you decided?
You know, it was one of those things where, you know, I had a couple of little jobs doing this. Domino's Pizza. Maybe I can. Working for them. And, you know, I do little side jobs for my family every once in a while. And, you know, it just wasn't there was no career there. I had no direction or drive. So I needed a big change in my life.
And you mentioned you were a tournament water skier. That I did not know. So I'm assuming slalom?
Correct. Yeah, I was doing slalom tricks, and I did a little bit of jumping in my time. This is way back before wakeboarding, so you'll have to excuse me. It's all old water skiing. You know, we don't do half of that stuff these days anymore.
So jumping off the ramp like Fonzie did over the shark in Happy Days?
Exactly correct.
Exactamundo. Okay. I did not know that. And who taught you how to water ski?
My father did, actually. So we have had a small lake place up in North Georgia, which we still have. And he had a little ski boat, and he taught me how to do everything. And then I worked for a local water ski shop, and that got me into the tournament program because they were always at the tournament. So that worked out for me.
Okay. Question. So did you learn how to mono ski by dropping one ski, or did you learn right out of the water one ski?
Dropping a ski is of course the easiest way, because you can, you know, when you're doing two skis, you can lift one up, one foot up and okay, I'm getting the balance. But eventually, yes, I did learn to do the deep water start.
Do you remember your first deep water start when you first nailed it?
No.
I do. There was a pivotal moment in my life. So, but because I didn't know about the two ski, they taught me in Club Med. So I guess they started me right from the ocean on top of that. So I remember when I first got out, it was pretty big accomplishment for me.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, and I remember my first time going barefoot water skiing, on the other hand, so which was a big accomplishment for me. But, you know, that was, you know, which led to the ski shows in Cancun in Sandpiper. And, anyway, we'll get to that, I'm sure.
Okay, so now we're in 1990 and you apply. So how did you find out because back then, I don't know, at least in my time, 94, it was pretty secretive. You had to know someone who knew someone and told you how to do it.
That's true too. So I ended up writing a letter to the New York offices and put it in the mail. And a couple of weeks later, maybe a month, got a letter back, says, hey, we'd like to talk to you. And, you know, can you come meet us in Sandpiper, Florida? And so I wrote back another letter because, again, you know, way back when there was no internet. So I wrote another letter back, and I said, yes, and I'll meet you. You know, I can't remember exactly the circumstances, but it was in Sandpiper Bay, Florida, which I'd never been to before. So I borrowed a car and drove down, and the rest is history.
You had your interview at the Club Med itself in Sandpiper?
At the Club Med itself, correct. In the in, just in the there's the theater, and just to the right of the theater were is a little outdoor area, and that's where my interview was.
I never heard that before. So was this unusual, or that's the way they did it in 1990?
I don't know. It was how I did it. So there was probably a dozen of us there, if I can remember. I don't remember exactly what everybody else was applying for service wise, but I think I was the only water ski guy they were interviewing that day.
Okay, so if you can take me to the interview, so you get there, do you recall who gave your interview?
I do not. I know it was a very lovely woman, and she was a little bit, had a French accent, which is, I can't say that's my thing, but that's my thing. But we talked for a long time and probably almost an hour about water skiing and Club Med life, and I told her about my experiences in the 70s. And she asked the questions that I'm sure you're going to ask about my experiences in the 70s. We just had a great time sitting there talking. And at the end of it all, she says, well, you know, can you start tomorrow? And I was like, well, no, I've got to go home, get out of my apartment, sell my car, get rid of all my stuff, and give me 2 weeks and I can absolutely, I'll come back. So she said, great, we're going to send you to Dominican Republic, Punta Cana. 2 weeks later, I got a ticket in the mail and it says you're going to Sandpiper, Florida. And I'm like, well, okay. Okay, I'm not going to Dominican Republic, I guess.
Wait, did Punta Cana have water ski at that time?
Yes.
I did
3 seasons water ski in Punta Cana, but we're not talking about those seasons.
Okay, so, yeah. No, I did not know that. All right. Okay, so did she ask you to prove that you were a water skier? Did you bring down some photos or?
I did not. I guess I talked the talk at least, and I didn't bring any photos. I didn't have to prove anything, but I just told her about all my experiences at the ski shop and in the tournaments and teaching my friends how to water ski and things like that. And it just kind of worked out for me, I guess. So she was impressed enough. She gave me the job. Thank God.
After the interview, did you have time to check out the resort?
Oh no, I didn't get to stay in the club. I had to get a hotel off the site, which was kind of funny. But I did go out and have a beer to celebrate. And then I drove home the next day and again, sold all my stuff.
Okay, you sell your stuff. So you go back to Sandpiper. What did you think of when you saw the quote unquote beach at Sandpiper?
Well, you know, I slightly disappointed, you know, in the waters, the best water. But the great thing about Sandpiper, one of the great things about Sandpiper back in the day was the water was flat. It was great for water ski. I mean, we had Mastercraft ski boats. And, you know, during my time there, my skiing progressed so much. So because I had a great teacher with me.
Did you geos like get up early, crack of dawn and get in some runs before you had to open?
Absolutely. So I'm going to introduce, if you will, Lou, my greatest friend in the world, one of my greatest friends, who was my chief of water ski. And we would go out just about every morning and go skiing. We set up a little slalom course down the way, out of the way where nobody was going to run into it. And we would just work on skiing and techniques. And hey, you know, you got to push your hips forward through the waves and, you know, all these little tips, if you will. The greatest thing, Lou and I were about evenly matched ski-wise. So we were able to build off of each other and really, you know, I could watch him and say, hey, you know, you need to do this. Or he would tell me, hey, Rick, you know, straighten your arm and, you know, do this when you're trying making this turn or whatever the circumstance was. That improved each of our skiing tremendously.
Was he the first geo you saw when you got to the village, or do you even recall like when you got back, you know, where did you meet the geo at the airport or?
The first geo I remember seeing was the chief of mini club, Simi. And he was at the bar. Cause I got to the village, got threw my stuff in my room and went to the bar, you know, kind of wild eyed and trying to figure out what the heck was going on. And I remember he wrote down a little phrase in French that I was going to write back to my girlfriend back at home. And well, that never happened because, you know, Club Med happened. So
were there a lot of French guests there in 1990?
Not that I recall, but I mean, lots of American. I still remember lots of Japanese. Yoshi, who lives down here in Atlanta, and his wife, Amy, were both geos there with me that season. And I still have the little piece of paper. He wrote down all the little Japanese phrases, you know, kata omai, udunubashite, izamagate, which is, you know, arm straight, knees bent, stand up slowly. And all the little phrases in Japanese so that, you know, I could teach the Japanese guests how to ski. And it worked out great. I mean, I even remember one of the phrases was warate, which means smile, for when Janae was in the boat, she would take their picture. And it was like, okay, this all worked out. It was just a great, it was a great first season. I mean, it wasn't the Caribbean, but it was still an awesome season. The people that were there made it. You know, I mean, there's so many great people that I'm still in touch with.
Wait, hold up just a sec. There were that many Japanese GMs there that you had to learn Japanese phrases?
Oh, well, I mean, I didn't have to, but I chose to.
But sure. But there were that many that.
Oh, yeah. It's a big draw because of Disney. They would come in and fly over and go to Disney and I guess see other sites around town. But Yoshi and Mooney, one of the other ones, on my one day off in the 6 months, I think I had, I ended up going to Disney with Mooney, one of the other Japanese GOs. And, you know, he did it every day. So he was, you know, you go here, you skip this one, you go here. And we saw all of Epcot Center in a couple of hours.
You started Sandpiper summer of 1990, correct?
Correct.
And who was the chief when you started there?
The chief of the village was Abdel, but Howard McCarley was there as the second chief of the village, if you will, maybe doing a stage or something to that effect. But he was great too. I love Howard. He was very good, very fair. He came up with a great nickname for me. He always introduced me as Rick from Mars. So, and I was a little quirky when I first got there. Absolutely. I didn't have anything going on for me at the time. Cause I, you know, didn't know how to do this, didn't know how to do that. I couldn't dance for the anything. You know, he encouraged me a lot. You know, Greg Schneider was the chief of sports. He encouraged me even more. And then Lou being, you know, he encouraged me the most and it just turned out to be a wonderful season.
So did Howard eventually become the chief of village your season?
Not while I was there. He was a chief of village in other seasons, but I never worked with him or Greg again.
Did he ever do Operation Howard on the small beach in Sandpiper?
I do not recall that.
Okay. Because I learned my first season what Operation Howard was, and I never believed it. I did have another GO who will confirm this next week. I just was curious if you ever participated in Operation Howard.
I do not think I did. If I did, it was unwillingly, and it was obviously I had a little too much rum at the time.
No. Do you know what Operation Howard is?
I do not.
Okay, well, he's famous for lining up GOs or himself going all over the village and picking up cigarette butts. So when enough GOs screw up or, you know, the feedback's not great, I heard he, you know, lines everyone up on the beach and they go down the beach and they pick up cigarette butts. And my my manager in Turks and Caicos did this my first season with the whole GO team. We the scuba team were exempt because we had to get up early anyway. But that's where I first heard about. But I was always curious if it was true, and I had it confirmed with someone that it was true. So okay, I was just curious if he did that in your season. All right.
Well, fortunately, I don't think I ever got in really big trouble that first season. I did. I still have a bunch of the write ups from the guests saying, you know, hey, Rick, you know, thank you so much for helping us at the water ski or, you know, doing whatever I had to do to help out the guests. And it was a great first season.
Did you have any trouble adjusting to the, you know, 7 days a week, 16 hours a day grind?
Well, yeah, a little bit. It was tiring at first. And of course, I came half unprepared. You know, they gave you the piece of paper that says, you know, bring red clothes, bring white clothes, bring, you know, blue clothes and, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, for White Night, I showed up in a tank top and, you know, walked into the restaurant and Howard was like, no, Rick, you have to have a collared shirt. So I was like, oh, okay, Howard, I'll go find a collared shirt. So again, I only had brought one white shirt tank top because I was going to be working on the beach on the water ski. You know, hey, I need some sun, right? But
sorry. sorry.
Well, okay. You know, it was a different club.
I know.
It was a little.
So your idea for Elegant Night was to wear the white tank top too, I'm guessing.
This is a little naive.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, a little bit naive. And, you know, it's just, okay, you know, hey, it's a white shirt. I already own this white shirt. Great. You know, but I got a little bit better as I, you know, the first week I had to go to the mall many times to get, you know, a shirt with a collar or to get, hey, you know, these pants, these are pants, not jeans. You know, it's like, okay, I got better. Just, you know, I remember Club Med, everybody wearing Perios and t-shirts the whole time. I, you know, that was back in the 70s. So, you know, that was my impression of Club Med. It was a little more formal when I started to be a GO. And it's even more formal now.
Did you ever put Rick from Mars on your badge or was it just always Rick?
It was always Rick Waterski or Rick Ski Nautique or something to that effect.
When you arrived, did you experience any kind of culture shock? Were there like any European guests there that summer or just strictly North American, some Japanese?
There were, I remember some, you know, Canadians, of course, that, you know, they always come down and every once in a while there'd be a French family that would come through and it was like, oh, okay, now I have to learn a little bit bit of French, and the French GOs that were working there helped out a lot. We actually had a French classes to lessons to learn a little bit more. But I learned most of my French on the ski boat. Just again, bras tendus, genoux pliés, lève-toi doucement. You know, and you know, I used to be able to do six languages in water ski lessons, and now I can maybe squeak through a couple.
So it's safe to say there wasn't much cause for culture shock. You didn't have to adjust to any eye-opening things, right?
No. Well, I can't talk about the topless girls, can I?
Well, no, that's fine. Someone else also mentioned that, and he didn't know what to do, or because, and obviously they were Europeans that were sunbathing without a shirt.
Correct. Correct.
That's culture shock. It happened to me too. It happens to everyone.
Yeah. I mean, it's the, you know, that's there's a story about Tahiti that I can tell you later, and we'll get into that, I'm sure.
Yeah. We'll stop the recording for that one. Okay. So were there any summer 1990 Sandpiper? So how long did you actually stay there, your first season?
I was there 7 months.
Oh, 7 months. That'll bring us. So you left, what month did you leave?
October, November, somewhere around in there. I don't have an exact time. I know the exact day I started, which was April 21st, which is Earth Day. So that was my first full day at Club Med. So every year that comes around, it's kind of a little happy anniversary for me.
Did you know you were, when you did your interview, did you know you were going to have to participate in shows? Did the person giving your interview tell you that?
I had an idea, and yes. And of course I was, you know, more than willing to try. I think I was in just about every darn show that first season.
Really?
And they always put me in the back. Oh, they always put me in the back too, because I couldn't dance with the hoot.
And because you were tall, right?
Exactly correct. I was willing too. That's the thing. I was like, sure, I'll try anything. But the late night rehearsals, you know, up till 2 a.m. really just, though, that's what really started to wear on me that first season. Because I was like, yes, you know, my gosh, I have to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning to go get the ski boat ready, et cetera, et cetera. So
yeah, the shows were great. Yeah, I had a problem with, you know, midnight rehearsals or what have you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, and it was elaborate and it was fun. And you know, there, you know, Anne Sophie was one of my dance partners in a couple of shows. And, you know, she calls me her best dancer, you know, and I'm like, well, I don't know about that, but we had a lot of fun. And, you know, she was French. And so I was totally in love. And but she showed me a lot of things. And then she taught me how to dance, too.
Did she teach you crazy signs at all?
No, she didn't do that. You know, that was all me, again, standing in the very back, trying to figure it all out and saying, OK, my hands up and hands then left and right. And hold on, which one is next? Oh, my gosh. You know, after a week or so, I was fairly good at it. And then, you know, by the end of the season, it was like, OK, that one again.
Do you have any favorite crazy signs? Top three?
The old favorite was the old the duck dance. And
oh,
I can't
God,
remember.
Don't say that. You like that one?
It was just funny because you got to pat the girls on the butt, you know. I mean,
I think I'm gonna have to end this interview here. Okay. Okay. Well, besides the duck dance, any other ones you liked?
No, I mean, crazy science for me was like, oh gosh, we have to go do this. And it was good. It was fun. It was energizing, you know, because it got you going again after sitting around either, you know, around the pool or, you know, at late at night. But, you know, hands up was always a favorite just because, you know, it was hands up and it was easy and everybody did it and it worked.
You're doing water ski for a couple of weeks. Now, are you very content in that job? Did you look around the resort and see what other people were doing and said, I'd like to switch and try that? Or you just wanted to stay in water ski?
No, I really liked being on the sports team. Again, Greg Schneider was the chief of sports. He treated us really good. Lou being my greatest friend there. The opportunity to go skiing anytime we wanted to. And we would even take other GOs. Sean from the bar would go out water skiing early morning or late afternoon with us. It was fun because a lot of the GOs on their off time would come down to the water ski to go water skiing, and they would either ride in the boat as a watcher. So I got to meet everybody because everybody, you know, the mini club girls would come down and, hey, I want to ride in the ski boat and get some sun. I'm like, no problem at all. And it just worked out. So it was a great job. You know, I saw the sailing. And that looked like a lot of fun. And I knew how to sail at the time, which I was a sailing and windsurf GO years later, but that's still not my first season.
Were there any memorable guests that first season that stood out to you? I'm not talking like celebrity guests, just you, was there any guests that, I don't know, kept coming back?
Well, there was one, the most memorable guest I have to say was Kitty. And Kitty was completely blind and happened to be that my parents were there on vacation and my parents adopted Kitty, and Kitty would come to the water ski and the whole week she was learning to water ski. Again, completely blind. you know, we would have her on the barefoot boom right off the side of the boat and giving her instructions. I would be in the water right next to her on the barefoot boom, telling her, okay, now the boat's going to start to go and we're going to start to stand up. You're going to stand on your feet, even balance, you know, and every time she would make a mistake, I was right there to either grab her life jacket and prevent her from falling, or may help her make a correction really quickly, you know, keep your arms straight, you know, here comes a wave, you know, you're going to have to bend your knees a little bit to let the wave go, you know, your skis go over the wave. But she was there at the village the whole week. And she was probably the most memorable person just because of her unique situation. And she was going on the trapeze and trying the trapeze. She didn't hold back for a thing. And to be blind and have that much courage, I just really admired her courage and, you know, wow, she traveled to Club Med by herself from, you know, wherever she was from. I don't remember. And again, to have that much courage, that was just, I just remember that part and her vividly.
She must have loved the water skiing and having you next to her, you know, getting up on two skis. That must have been fun for her.
I think she enjoyed herself. I mean, you know, but that's one of those glowing reviews, for lack of a better word, that I got at the end of that week, you know, that Howard was like, hey, Rick, you know, here's a great, you know, this kitty, you know, everybody, all the geos in the village knew her because she would do every little thing, trying, you know, one day going again, the trapeze or water ski or sailing or whatever it was. So everybody knew of her. And she was just, you know, she wrote up a huge letter thanking all the people that had helped her out through the whole week. And, you know, that it was just amazing to have somebody that courageous in your life, even if it's for only a week.
That would definitely be a memorable guest for sure. Since you already knew how to water ski, windsurf, and sail, was there any skill that you learned there that you didn't know? Like trapeze,
The trapeze, absolutely. That I, you know, had, of course, had seen the trapeze on TV, the Ringling Brothers or whatever, but had never tried it. And as a matter of fact, my first day in Club Med, I was elected to be the captain of the sports team, the sports team where you have to recruit all the guests to be on your team. And everybody does all the events.
Olympic Day.
The Olympic Day. That's what it's called. I couldn't remember. And so I was the captain for the, you know, the whatever team it was. And trapeze was one of the things we had to do. And so that was my first experience, you know, going up. And oh yeah, going
up there, trapeze and Olympic Day. What did you have to do?
You had to actually make a catch and come back.
Oh, really?
Or at least fake it, you know, because I don't think we actually had a catcher, but you had to keep your knees up on the bar and do all that stuff. And you know, there was basketball and all sorts of other events, but I definitely, and beer drinking contest, of course. I just remember the trapeze distinctly, and I've got a great photo of myself shooting baskets on that day with my Earth Day t-shirt on and everything. So it was a very memorable experience.
Was that Earth Day t-shirt a tank top as well?
It was not. Thank you very much. I had a little bit of a, you know, class, but I just didn't. I knew what I was getting into, but in the 70s, it was a different Club Med. You know, it was at tank tops and perios. So
after a few weeks of your time at Sandpiper, was there anything that you didn't like Village, or was there something that took time to adjust to?
The schedules were good and bad at the same time, because you got the schedule for the week and it was like, okay, Rick's doing Village, rats. Okay, you know, Rick's doing the set up the bleachers for the, you know, whatever show it with the trapeze show, rats. You know, oh, Rick's doing Village again. Rats.
I thought you said Rick didn't get into trouble that season.
Well, no, but I mean, it seemed like I got picked for everything. I don't know, but it was still a lot of fun. You know, the hanging out and getting mosquito bit out in the front of the village was never fun. But, you know, we did what we could with the off spray and running into the bar real quick to get another refreshing beverage.
Knowing that you had to eat all your meals with guests, was that a problem for you? Were you always extroverted, or were you shy?
No, Club Med really brought me out of my shell. You know, going there the first time and being seated with guests was great, because, you know, that you'd walk in and the hostess would be like, hi, Rick, you know, and let me find you a table. I've got a single right over here. It's like, oh, great. So, you know, I'd introduce myself to everybody at the table, and now I work at the water ski, and I'd say, you know, please come tomorrow and, you know, I'll teach you a water ski. And it was a great chance to meet people and to, you know, hang out, meet new friends. And, you know, I had this one thing that I used to do, and it was great. So I would get the people to the water ski, and I tell them, all right, look, this is how it's going to work. If I cannot teach you how to water ski, I'm going to buy you a drink. But if I can teach you how to water ski, you can buy me a drink. So the great thing about all that is I never had to buy a drink. So it kind of worked out in my favor.
What was your beer choice back then?
Oh, good gosh. The beer choice back then was whatever they had on tap at the bar, because I don't recall any specialty beers. It was, hey, you know, a light beer or a regular beer. I don't recall brands back then, or it was either that, it was a rum and Coke, which was probably typical.
What kind of rum? Captain Morgan, please say yes.
Typically a Bacardi guy.
Oh, okay. Hey, I like Bacardi too. Were there any hurricanes that came that summer or close by you at all?
We did have a hurricane, and I can't remember the name of it, but it skirted the coast. So it stayed about 50 miles offshore. So we got some pretty good winds off the storm. The crazy thing about it is that Lou and I, we'd kind of, you know, we had our little adventures, and we took the ski boat out that night, and we went body surfing in the surf on the beach, because we could take the ski boat down the river and go on the backside of the dunes and park the ski boat, then walk across the dunes to where the beach was and go body surfing. And the waves were tremendous. It's not until much later in life that I found out that that area was the shark attack capital of the world. So not exactly the smartest
thing I did. Well, yeah, you say you did this at night, correct?
Correct, exactly. Even worse.
when sharks come into shore at night to feed, okay.
Exactly. And there's apparently that area, and it's not near the club, of course. It's, you know, offshore. But that's a breeding ground and a calving area for the sharks. So there's lots and lots and lots of sharks in the area. And most of the time, it's a brush or it's an accidental bite or something like that. But way off on the coast there, that's a lot of that type of activity happened.
I see the appeal of windsurfing at night, which I've done under a full moon in Australia, but what was the appeal to body surfing at night?
It's just something different to do. You know, hey, look, I'm not in the show tonight. Let's go out and do something. Hey, there's lots of waves. Let's go body surfing. Sounds like a great idea. So
at the time, right?
Okay. Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, we did a lot of things that we probably shouldn't have done. And if Howard ever hears of this, you know, podcast, I might get in trouble, you know, after the fact, but I certainly hope not.
Besides the people you mentioned already, like Howard and Greg Snyder, were there any other employees or managers like Geo's that stood out to you, made a positive impact on you, a good impression?
Wow. There's someone who was very good
at their job and you went, wow, that's someone I'd like to emulate.
Well, there was, like, you know, Carlos was animation, and he was outgoing, and he was, you know, put all his might into his skits, you know, when he was doing whatever he was doing on stage. And I took some of his skits later in my Club Med career and did them myself in other villages. And I'm just looking down here. What can I see this list here? You know, there was lots and lots of geos that I identified with that season and or became great friends with, or and still today, to this day, still hang out with. I mean, geos are awesome people. You know, whenever I travel, I seek out the geos where I go. I was in Virginia a couple of years ago, met Grant Simmons. You know, we'd never worked together, but we talked. It was like, hey, you know, you're the type of person, that I want to hang out with. And so you do that. You know, I was met Jackie when I was in Houston, Texas years ago. We just hang out and had a meal and a beer, and it was just awesome.
Okay, your time at Sandpiper comes to an end. Did you request a second season immediately?
Of course I requested a second season. I had all singles villages on my list.
Which ones?
You know, Cancun, Turks, and
Playa Blanca?
Probably, yes. And I ended up getting Punta Cana. So, you know, family village, go figure.
Also water ski?
Correct. Also water ski. I was water ski every season, except for one in Ixtapa, which was windsurf sailing.
How many seasons or years overall did you do?
And seven seasons. Enjoyed every one of them. All of them were great for one reason or the other. All of them had their, you know, bad parts, if you will, you know, but they were all wonderful people, wonderful places, locations.
Would you say that one of those was magical in any way? Was it the first one?
Magical season might have been Ixtapa, because I was literally in every show. I had the time of my life. I had finally figured out my groove. And so, you know, I was able to have a couple of female companions occasionally. And I had definitely come into my, I'd gotten my groove, if you will. You know, after that season, I got promoted to chief of ski and sailing in Sandpiper.
Did you meet any celebrities your first season or any season in Club Med?
First season, not that I recall. I did meet when I was in Eleuthera. Well, Meredith Baxter Burney was there. I didn't really pay attention to her.
Oh, come on, family ties, man.
Well, I know who she is. Okay. But, you know, she was a little aloof. But, and I can't remember his name right now. Boy, the lead singer, the lead guitarist from Brian May. So, I met Brian May of Queen in Eleuthera. And that was actually when we had had a hurricane there at the same time. So
very cool. Yeah, I heard he'd show up at Club Med's and actually judge the lip sync contest while they were doing Queen.
Yeah, I actually did play the drums for the Bohemian Rhapsody while he was in the audience. So that was kind of fun.
That must be a good memory, right?
It was. That's the great thing about, you know, my time. And I think everybody's time in Club Med. There's a lot of great memories. You know, there's a lot of great people. There's a lot of great places.
Well, this one, you do have a celebrity encounter I like. It has nothing to do with Club Med, but I was wondering if you can repeat it to our listeners how Kate Hudson almost killed you. Do you mind sharing that story?
Well, that actually wasn't at Club Med.
No, I know, but I always get a kick out of it, if you wouldn't mind repeating it.
Sure. So my buddy Gary, he is now he's vice president of Universal Studios in California. And at the time, he was doing production for the movie Skeleton Key in Louisiana, where I was working. You know, he invited me down to the set, and, you know, I got to see all the things from behind the scenes that, you know, nobody ever gets to see because, you know, they don't show you the behind the scenes stuff. But it was awesome. And, you know, I'm standing 3 feet away from Kate Hudson as she's doing her lines. I'm like, this is really cool. And, you know, we go eat a meal. And so, you know, I'm about to leave and we're walking down the little path. Here comes Kate Hudson in her little golf cart doing about 40 miles an hour and zips by me by about 2 inches clearance. And I'm like, holy crud, I almost got killed by Kate Hudson on a golf cart. So it was, you know, funny at the time and everybody laughed, but it was, that's, if you will, a close encounter.
Thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
So do you have any funny, appropriate stories from your first season that you could share with us? I don't know. Could it be anything, an excursion that you went on, something funny happened on the ski boat?
There's a lot of fun things that happened on the ski boat that I...
No, I meant...
You wanted to keep this G-rated, yeah, so exactly. I can't tell you about some of those.
Yeah, no, just the clean ones. Even you. I have clean ones.
Yeah, occasionally. The greatest thing that happened to me at Club Med at Sandpiper the first season was learning to water ski in the pool. And as you know, you'll see, you know, the one guy sits at the end of one end of the pool, and on the other end of the pool are about 30 GOs all grabbing the ski rope. You know, it's an extended ski rope, and they just start running at full speed and pull you across the pool. Well, that's not exactly the easiest thing to do because of various reasons. You know, it's not a consistent pull. You know, it's kind of jerky when you're doing it. And learning to do that that's one of my greatest memories of that and other seasons at Club Med was skiing in the pool. But I still remember Greg. He would have they'd put the music on, and it was this is going to be an edit part.
No problem. You can pause, and I can shorten it.
Motley Crue. It was a Motley Crue song. I thought I wrote it down. It was that wild guitar entrance of that Motley Crue song, and that's what he would introduce me as, Rick from the land of the B-52s skiing across the pool, and I would have to do the toe hold and across the pool, and then, you know, take my foot out of the toe hold, and I would step off of the pool. So I stayed dry the whole time, and that kind of became a thing. So, you know, Greg would be, and here's Rick from the land of B-52 staying dry in a toe hold. And, you know, so it was kind of a fun thing. And learning to do that was an awesome experience because I don't think I'll ever do that again, unfortunately, but that was a lot of fun.
I actually have a connection to this story because when I arrived for my first season, I arrived late at night just before what I found out was a sport demo, was told to dress in all white, hurry back to the pool. As soon as I get to the pool, someone slaps a tiki torch in my hand, tells me to run around the pool. And eventually someone sticks a rope in my hand with a piece of wood and tells me to run that way. Had no idea what was going on. Never been to a resort, never been to Club Med. And it was so dark, I didn't see who was attached or what was attached to the rope that I'm supposed to pull. And it was, sure enough, a water skier, probably Freddie, pulling him across the pools. But I had no idea what I was doing. You know, oh my God, it was so...
Right. Your white shirt, was it a tank top?
No. I had the presence of mind to bring one with sleeves and a collar.
Well, thank God for that. You're one of the smart ones, I guess.
Okay, so take me back to, I'm curious about, your grandmother would pay for you guys or take you guys on vacation in the 70s. So what Club Meds were you going to back then?
Oh, we went to, and again, there was no kids club when I started back there. So I know it was all adults villages. And I went to Fort Royal, Guadalupe. We went to Eleuthera in the Bahamas, went to Kauai in Hawaii, which was only open a couple of years. And I can't recall what years those was, what years they were open. And I also got to go to Moorea in Tahiti.
Wow, that's some nice grandmother.
She was pretty awesome. But, you know, and the great thing about Moorea is, you know, they had every location had water ski. So I would always go down and hang out at the water ski dock, especially in Tahiti, though. You had to swim out to the ski dock. You know, it was a floating little dock out there. And, you know, I was a pretty good skier at the time, but I took water ski lessons every day that I was in Tahiti because, you know, the French Gio, she was topless. So I made sure I took extra water ski lessons every day.
You were a teenager back then?
Yes. Okay. I mean, you know, early teens, you know, 10, 13, 14, somewhere around there.
Okay. So yeah, I guess it's between volleyball lessons and topless water ski lessons with a beautiful Tahitian Geo, then I guess the choice is pretty clear to a 13-year-old, right?
Exactly. Correct. I have my priorities.
Wow. You even went to the Club Med in Hawaii. That's pretty awesome.
It was really great. I mean, I remember they had a sandcastle building contest and I won the sandcastle building contest. So that was kind of fun. But I remember the shows were in the round because it had a little stage and there was a 360 degree audience. So that was kind of cool. And the food, of course, has always been good at Club Med. But again, it was all t-shirts and Perrios and, you know, maybe people dressed up at night, but I wasn't paying attention to that. I was eating great food and, you know, watching these great shows and beautiful girls up on the stage. And that's how I knew later in life. I was like, I should be doing that.
I'd say you're very well prepared more than most to become a Geo with that story.
Well, I half knew what I was getting into with the exception of the collared shirts. So,
yeah. But you told me you're originally a SoCal boy, right? Southern California boy. So
exactly, yeah. Born in Newport Beach.
Okay.
And so, I unfortunately had to move at 2 years old when my parents, you know, left. They wouldn't leave me by myself, so I had to move with them, you know, back to Atlanta. Well, actually, to the East Coast. We moved up and down the East Coast, and then finally settled in Atlanta in the late 70s.
Wow, this is some story, Rick.
Hey, it's a good story. I mean,
well, yeah.
I've enjoyed it so far.
Well, yeah, I really want to thank you for sharing it with me. I learned a lot about you I didn't know.
Well, that's good.
Any last words for a Geo or a future Geo who's on the fence about signing up for Club Med? Should they do it? Should they not do it? What do you say?
Oh, good gosh. Again, probably one of the best experiences of my life. It brought me out of my shell big time. I learned so much, even a little bit of dancing. Thank you, French girls. And just, again, It was one of the greatest things I've done in my life. And I'm just so thankful for all the friends and the people that I met and was able to work with and that are still great friends now. And you guys are all awesome.
Well, yeah, we are. Thank you.
Well, Greg, I have a question for you.
Okay, sure.
So, you know, this is your great podcast. What was your inspiration to come up with this podcast?
Well, I'd been listening to podcasts for a year. I've been running marathons and I got so sick of every song that I loved on my iPod, I couldn't listen to it anymore. So I thought, oh, I'll try a podcast. Never listened to one before. And I thought this is great because you get so absorbed in the story as you're running, you forget you're running. And I always said running would be so good if you can get your mind to go somewhere else and not focus on the running. And that's what they were. So I download 3 or 4 and go out for a long run. And then maybe 6, 7 months later, I thought I could do something like this, but what could I do? And then slowly the idea of doing one about Club Med. And of course, every idea or every name of the podcast I wanted was taken already. So then I thought, well, what if I just focus on the first season of everyone? Because everyone, they're like snowflakes. Everyone's story of their first season is truly unique. No two are exactly alike. And then I thought, well, this would be a good oral history of Club Med, you know, if I do this, because for all I know, I don't think it's an audio anywhere. You know, everyone's story could be an oral history of how Club Med started. And I hope to get on Geos, you know, that worked in the 70s and 60s eventually. And, you know, other people who worked on cruise ships as well. So that was my idea.
Well, you could have named your podcast there, you know, 3,500 Days of Summer. that may have worked.
I never liked that title. I wanted Endless Summer, but that one was already taken. Because for me, yes, a guy from Montreal, that's why I stayed 10 years, because I hate the winter so much. You know, it's winter now. I'm looking out at just an endless sea of white, and every day was summer in Club Med, and I was always happiest in the summer. So obviously I was happy every day in Club Med because it was always summer. And so that's what it was like to me. It was just an endless summer where I was at my happiest.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, you being from Southern California, you know, you've always had great weather. And even Atlanta, you moved to another place that more or less has good weather, right?
Oh, yeah. I'll stay in the South. I don't think I'll ever move up north. I mean, I like looking at snow. I like looking at snow on TV, and that's about it. So yeah.
That's TV's where it should stay.
Exactly correct.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, everyone, that was Mr. Rick Ross. And again, Rick, I want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It really means a lot to me. Thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Glad I could be of service.
Well, that's it, everyone. We'll see you next week and take care. Bye.